You don't need Jeff Probst to come out and explain to you where to get the best deals this holiday season. Check out the 12 Days of Deals on Amazon.com. You'll get the best deals and help support Rob as a Podcast when you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's about to talk Survivor Cambodia for the last time until Evolution Strategy Volume 4.
Yes.
Rob Cisternino, hello everybody, and welcome back to our voicemail show for the Survivor Cambodia reunion finale extravaganza. And here with me in the studio for the first time since the finale of Survivor Worlds Apart, the great Josh Wiggler.
Hi, Rob.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going well.
Yes. What a 24 hours we've had.
Yeah, it's been long.
Yeah.
It really has been. It's been fun. It's been exhausting, but it's been good.
It really has been a very fun last couple of days. Probably at this point almost going on 30 hours of just nonstop fun since we arrived at the finale on Wednesday afternoon. It was really, really fun. You talked me into going out there. It's a, you know, well-established in RHAP lore at this point that you talked me into going out there.
Yep.
And I did, and what a fun time we had. We sat in the audience. A lot of people spotted us.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that, like, our primo spot is during the, you know, super important and meaningful Danny Dietz segment, where we're just kind of in the background looking like goofs.
Yes.
But that's where you could see us.
Big and long!
Yeah, that was us.
Yeah, big and long in the background.
Yeah, if you want to see us, go ahead and watch the segment where they go and talk to Terry's wife and Danny in the audience, and you could see very comical, I realized that I was on camera in there. I didn't know what to do. I just sort of I don't want to be a total idiot, but I also want to.
But there's a great moment of you hitting me and being we're on.
Yeah, that was I wanted to sort of acknowledge you guys listening at home.
Yeah.
Of hey, we're here.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it. I didn't see this part. I didn't get to rewatch the reunion, but my wife texted me and said sweet move, pushing up your glasses up your nose in the Joe's dad segment. So
yeah,
apparently that's a thing.
Well, you had said to me, oh, there's Joe's dad. So if they cut to Joe's dad,
right? Get ready.
Get in there.
Yeah.
And then during that moment when they're talking to Joe's dad in the audio or talking about Joe's dad, there was the camera guy is frantic. They didn't know where
they had
he was.
No idea where he was.
And then a bunch of people just started pointing down there, but he was at an angle. I'm oh, you got the shot.
Yeah.
You got the shot, Wiggler.
Yeah, we were there. It was good. It was good. So I think that we really took full advantage of we got really great positioning this year. Usually I'm back row jury.
Yeah.
We were dead center. It was good. Yeah.
It was really, really fun.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been in the room for one of those finales since, I think, Vanuatu. And it was
a legendary finale.
Yeah. And it was really, really fun just to be in there. It was like being at a sporting event but it's a small room. It's an intimate setting. Probably only 150 people.
It's like arena football
in the room. Yeah.
Is that good?
But it was a really, really fun show just to be at, and especially with that tribal council, which we're definitely going to talk about here today.
Yeah.
And just to be in the room and just the energy in the room is you couldn't even hear it. People were just clapping for 2 minutes straight.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very fun night.
That's one thing. You do lose some details just because there is just this uproarious vibe in the room. So you do lose some key lines of dialogue. I want to make sure before we stop talking about our experience and start talking about the episode, could you speak to where we were and the unique situation of placement and who we were surrounded by?
Sure, sure. It was a really
great
interesting crowd because, you know, we had gotten there and it was we were sort of one of the last people to sit down because we were just sort of setting stuff up on the red carpet because I had a lot of equipment with me and I sort of wanted to get as much together before as we could. And we sort of got in right as they were recommending people sat down because the show was going to start, and we sat down and we're sort of looking around oh, okay, I don't really know what's going on. But the first person that reaches over Rob, and I look over and I'm introduced hey, it's me. Stephanie Savage.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
And we were sitting in between the, I guess we'll talk about back row jury. We were like right in between to the left of us. We had the Savage party.
Yes.
And to the right of us, we had the Chaos Cast party.
Yeah. So we were like the mediators. They put us in between to keep things cool between these two warring factions.
Right. So if,
or we were the first ones to die if anything went
right.
wrong.
So if, as Abby Maria said, that Savage and Cass were like the Ponderosa, like mom and dad. I don't know what we were. We were sort of like the
idiot kids.
I don't know what we were. Like the mom's friends from work or something like
right,
that.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, but it was very funny once we realized that because Cass's daughter wanted your autograph.
Yes,
that was a very sweet moment.
Yes, that Cass's daughter Sarah had asked for me to sign something. I said, "Do you want me to sign it, Chaos Sarah?"
She's like, "No."
Mr. Cass was there, very nice. But no, going back to the Stephanie Savage thing, who was also super nice. And you did the exit interview with Savage, so I wasn't sure how well the podcast was received.
Yeah.
Over at the Savage household, because you know. I thought it could have gone either way, considering the fact that I'm a
wimpy little non-leader.
Yeah, sure. No, Stephanie Savage, super nice.
Yeah.
Super nice.
Well, no, Savage said during my interview with him.
Very striking also, Josh.
Yes, indeed. I don't
know if you've heard.
Yeah, I've heard the story. I've seen in person. Everything's great. This is all very good. But no, he had said that he'd been watching Know-It-Alls and listening to the podcast a lot this
complimentary
season.
He was complimentary.
Yeah, and I saw him last night. He was a super, super good, you know, pleasant dude. So, I don't know. I'm one over on Savage. I had a very fun time with Savage last night.
Yeah. And then Stephanie says to me, you know who you're sitting next to?
I said,
oh my God, who's this? Dara Johnson.
Yes.
How about that?
Yeah. Cue the shower scene.
Yes.
Yeah. Get the music going.
It's like, oh my God, Dara.
Yeah, Dara was there. It was very fun. It was.
Did not recognize Dara.
No. We haven't seen Dara in a long time.
Yeah,
you know she's been doing her. What was it? Mortician. She's a mortician.
I don't know if she's a mortician anymore.
On the Chiron.
We didn't talk.
We don't know how real or legit that is today.
Yeah.
But how's Dara doing? What's the update?
She was good. I was sitting right next to Dara, and he's like, "Do you go to a lot of finales?" She's like, "No, not really.
The time."
And so she was very good, and she seemed like happy to say hi and at least to know somebody else there.
Was she liking the season? Was she into it?
I guess so. I didn't really talk.
Didn't talk strategy.
You know, at one point I was gonna like say to her like during the challenges, like, "Hey, Dara, you think you would have won those challenges?" But I'm like, "Oh, what are you doing? What are you gonna mess with people and like just be an idiot? Just stop being stupid." I was like having like an internal monologue with myself.
Yeah.
And then I was like, "I wonder where Tyson is." And then I looked down, like Tyson was like in the row in front of us.
It was great. The moment of realization was awesome because you must have been texting him or something, trying to figure out where Tyson is. Mm-hmm. And suddenly just Tyson bursts up into the air and goes, "I'm over here, dude."
Yeah.
So he was right over there. He was sitting in Sierra's seats. He was a substitute Laura Moret. Mm-hmm. And he was really embracing that role. I don't know if you hear it in the reunion, but certainly in the room, every once in a while, Tyson and Rachel, and there were a couple other people, were like, "We love you, Sierra. It's your mom over here." So Tyson was Sierra's mom for a night. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, just like thinking back in hindsight, I think it must have been like the jury members, loved ones, like the closer you were, you got to be like closer to the stage. Where like sort of like the people that were in like the finalists are definitely down on the bottom.
Yeah.
And so we were sort of like, we must have been, if you like went through it, like probably Kelly Wigglesworth, if she had guests, were probably right over there and it's sort of in that setup. But it was just a really fun way to watch the show. At one point I just had to get up. I was like sort of like the part of if this was a baseball game, I had to go to like the Shake Shack at one point.
Okay.
And I need a snack.
Yeah.
But then I came back for
the
reunion.
You were raving about the cookies, apparently, were phenomenal. You and Paul were talking about
them. Some really good cookies in the press area.
Yeah, so I missed out on that.
Yeah, so that was really strong.
A big bummer.
But overall, it was a really fun night to go to the Survivor finale. And then, of course, we did our stuff, which you could have seen. If you haven't seen the video or listened to the podcast, you can check it out on robhasawebsite.com. The video is up on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. And that was really fun to go and sort of like, be talking through everything and then have people, you know, shuttling through, which I had no idea if that was going to work as a concept for a show.
I didn't know how it was going to go. In my mind, there was longer breaks between interviews in past carpets that I've done, but it felt like they were cycling in really, really quick.
Yeah.
And I don't remember having nearly as much time with each person as we had on this one. We had everyone for like 15 minutes, it felt like.
Yeah.
Or maybe it just felt that way, but it was really cool to get everybody's take immediately as we were trying to puzzle out what the hell just happened in this episode. So no, it was great. And it was just, it was very emotional too for some of these people, you know, trying to, you know, obviously Jeremy was so happy. We talked to Spencer.
Happy?
I know. I don't think that Spencer was depressed, but he was melancholy. So it was interesting to see what everybody's, you know, kind of mental and emotional state was right after hopping off of the stage.
And then we went to work on getting the footage up. And, you know, Scott St. Pierre did a great job of getting the audio up very quick right after the show. Also, I want to give a thanks to Jordan Parhar and Jessica Lees, who did a great live show after the fact.
Hashtag Jordan's cat. That's good stuff. That was really fun. I just got to listen to it on the way over here.
And so then we went to the after party. We'll talk about that as well. But also then this morning, then I went ahead and had exit interviews with the final six.
And how much sleep were
you? Oh, I was on like almost no sleep. Yeah. I think I might have slept for basically from like 2 to 5.
Yeah.
And that was a product of the exit interviews were early. And also the baby was not cooperating.
Yeah, the baby didn't get the memo about the schedule.
That was like at 5 o'clock. Nicole was like, can you get up with the baby? I was like,
bad day to do it.
Yeah, I guess so.
But all right. We'll guess do so. It.
That's asked with a question, but it's really not a question. There's a question mark on that, but it's really just for show.
But Rob, you do this for the family, you know?
Yeah.
This isn't for you. It's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about your family.
I need to
do, Nicole.
Yeah, I need to do that Jeremy thing where I need to say, like, you know, like, I don't do this for me.
Yeah.
This is for Nicole. This is for Anthony. This is for Dominic.
Yeah.
I've said that to Nicole.
Uh huh.
You know, I try to say to her, like, you know, I'm doing
this for you.
I'm upstairs. You know, I do all these podcasts for you. And she's like, no, you don't. You do it for you.
Oh, no.
Like, yeah, we have a real Heisenberg conversation.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She's like, you don't do it for us. You do it for you. I'm like, can't it be both things? Can't it be both?
It can be both things. In the series finale, you'll admit what your true reasonings were.
But
no spoilers.
But that being said, I really was sort of like, well, in the past where I had done this, where it's like I didn't want to revisit the stuff that we talked about, but it was great that I was able to, you know, discuss a lot of things that we didn't talk about. You know, I tried not to revisit any of the topics that we had already or at least build off of them.
Yeah, well, I think that that's great. I mean, that was one thing that you had talked to me about was like, I don't know, like, is it going to be duplicative? Like, am I going to be just asking the same questions over again if I'm doing multiple interviews? But I think that you get to talk to them, you know, immediately while it's fresh in your mind. That was last night. And then today you've had time to percolate on some of this stuff. It was really complicated, heavy stuff that happened in this past episode. So you get a little tiny bit of distance away from it. And, I listened to the exit interviews. They were great. The Keith and Kimmy one is epic.
Yeah, that's really fun.
Legendary interview.
So the way that the exit interviews were set up also was that it was Jeremy, Spencer by himself, and then it was supposed to be Kelly and Tasha paired up.
Yeah.
And then it was then finally Kimmy and Keith paired up. So when we did the exit interview, so I talked to Jeremy and I spoke to them in order. Sometimes it's like a weird order that you get them, but I had it basically like in the row.
Yeah.
So I talked to Jeremy first, then I talked to Spencer, and then they said, okay, you're on with Kelly and Tasha. And I was like, hey, here we are again. Can you believe it? Like, shots fired.
Yeah.
And this is basically, you know, I said, where's Natalie Anderson? And it was almost inaudible what I was hearing back. It was like I was hearing all these voices. And so I sometimes, you know, in that situation, I'll just put my head down and try to power through it. And I guess Tasha was like already on her way back to the airport on a shuttle. And she's like, I can't hear anything. And so we just ended up having to drop Tasha from the call.
Yeah, we talked to you last night. We're fine. We
yeah.
Got it.
And so ultimately, I think that people were like, well, did Tasha stand you guys up? So it was just, we couldn't hear Tasha. So I said, okay, you know what? Let's just reset it. And then I just, you know, went forward with Kelly. Yeah. Like, you know, Tasha wasn't on the, cause it was unusable. The like minute of audio that we got with Tasha.
Yeah. And I mean, I get, you know, CBS has to package people together just to get through the day. There's so many people who have to go through these interviews and so many journalists who are trying to talk to people and press people. But I feel like you want to have that Wentworth interview isolated. There's so much to talk about with Wentworth, especially right now.
It almost would have made more sense to have Tasha and Spencer together.
I agree. Yeah. That would have made a lot of sense because they were, you know, they were obviously a pair. I think that Wentworth was such a breakout that I would want to just pick her brain, isolate.
And I sort of understand what they're thinking, where they feel like Spencer is more of a draw in terms of like, okay, we want to have him isolated. I'm not sure if they had like media requests that we want just Spencer, but it would have been a rather where Kimmy and Keith, I felt like were more compatible to sort of like, you know, goof around.
It's an amazing pair. That was a great combo.
For whatever reason, Kelly and Tasha, I feel like is always contentious, even going back to the Miss Survivor stuff. And there's actually a clip. Did you watch this of Malcolm talking with Kelly?
Yes, yes. Do you want me to set this up?
Yeah, set this up.
So Malcolm was on the carpet. He was doing interviews for CBS. He was great.
All of a sudden, Malcolm is such a big Kelly fan.
Yeah, I know. Well, they address it in the interview because Malcolm, obviously, he was on here with you sitting in the seat that I'm sitting in now. Talking about how
talking in that very microphone.
Yeah, talking about how he's not the world's biggest Wentworth fan. She's loud, and then he was, you know, insecure about if she was going to hear and if he was going to get in trouble. So he's interviewing her, and it goes well. They bond over the fact that they're both fourth place finishers. They're right at the door, and then he starts asking Kelly about why was Tasha such a non-factor in the final tribal council, as Tasha is right behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to the entire conversation that ensues, and it's pretty good. You should seek it out. You should watch it. It's pretty.
Yeah, she
pretty,
gets like a real good look. What would you define that look?
I don't know. She's just like staring it down. She's like directly into the camera.
Side eye. Would you say
there's some side eye in there for sure? Yeah.
Where could people watch that video? It's on the CBS website. I think also the Survivor Reddit has probably linked.
They have it.
It's around 5 minutes and 40 seconds into
the video. But the whole thing is worth watching. But it's on the CBS's YouTube page.
Yeah, Malcolm was doing a good job.
Yeah, Malcolm did great. I love that Malcolm is, I think this is a fun role for him.
Yeah, that was fun. All right, and then before we get into taking the voicemail questions, from the after party, you want to just set that up of what that was like for people who weren't there?
It was crowded. It was very busy. Basically, everybody from the season that you can think of was there. Lots of people who are also just Survivor alums were there. I got to meet Lynn Spillman. That was really cool.
Yeah.
I shook her hand and said, I'm a big fan of your work. That was really fun. Ken Raskoff was there. He's the first person I saw. He's always a true delight at these parties. Who were some of your highlights?
I did see Lynn on the way in, and I said to Lynn, like, hey, Lynn, you're going to keep making these shows, right? I got a lot riding in this. I'm really invested right now.
It's for your family.
Yeah. And she says at least 10 more.
Nice. Good.
So that's good.
That's great. 10 more seasons.
Please more.
10 more seasons. Yeah. But it was great. It was great. I got to hang out with Varner a little bit. Shireen Savage, again, was a delight. Lots of producers who were very complimentary about the podcast.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that. Always nice to hear, because I'm always like, I don't know. Am I pissing people off with this thing?
But now doesn't that put the pressure on even more, because they might be listening to this right now? And what if we're about to say something wrong?
What could go wrong?
Oh, no.
But I just, you know, there's a lot of masters to serve on this show of like the, you know, the fans and the people that will work on the show. And for the most part, I don't know exactly how to, you know, verbalize it, but I feel like through 6 years, you've done a good job of keeping almost everybody happy, except for the people that hate the show and don't listen to it. So that's fine.
Well, they can, you know, do whatever. But, you keep it honest. And the good news is that you happen to really love the show.
Yeah.
So when you're honest, it comes from a place of love. If it sounds critical, it's from a place of love. So it's all good stuff.
Yeah, I think that the key thing is just trying to always be fair and, you know, not get too just sort of like entrenched in one position. And I think that for the most part, as long as you keep burping, you'll be okay.
You'll be okay.
I love to hear about just like the random things from these parties. Who are some of the randomest people you saw?
Who are some of the most random people? So Vince Sly was there. I guess I should have
expected. The Dirty 30, they were in town.
Yeah.
But they were all like watching from a hotel room. Like they were in like a, was it?
I think that they were in the hotel where all the survivors tend to go. I don't know the name of it. I chose poorly. I went to the different hotel.
You could see on Instagram, like they had, like they were all just watched it in a hotel room. That must have been a wild time.
Yeah, I don't know. That had to be a party. But yeah, Vince Sly was there. I didn't get to talk to him at all. I was probably too afraid to go to Vince Sly. I don't know what would happen in that moment. Although I am a hugger. I missed an opportunity to get a Vince Sly hug.
A long hug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was bad. Who were some of the randoms that you saw?
I'm trying to think of anybody that was just pure random.
Yeah, the truth is, a lot of my memories are gone. Some of them are gone. Some of them are gone.
It was really hard to move around. It was just so packed in there that it was really, really, really tough.
It was a tight fit. Especially the bar area was really, packed. It was a true traffic jam.
Okay.
But it was fun. It was great.
I am sure that we will come up with more stuff as we go along and sort of like, have you checked your phone for pictures? Is it like The Hangover?
Oh man, the second Hangover reference in two podcasts. I don't think that I took any pictures. I mean, there's a great picture of you, me, and Fishback kind of battling it out. Finally, Steven and I getting to throw it down.
Yeah.
That was good. No, I have no other pictures than that.
Yeah.
That was a good
one. We did get to talk with Steven for a little bit. Steven was in very good spirits.
Steven was doing great. Steven was great. He was a few sheets to the wind, I think.
Yeah.
In his great plaid suit.
He was having a lot of fun. Okay. So, Josh, we have so many different voicemails to get through, sort of trying to contextualize so much of what we saw on the show last night. And I'm sure we will stumble onto so many things. But really, where we have gone through 31 seasons now of Survivor, you and I, in the last, what? When did we start the Evolution of Strategy? June of 2014?
June 2014. We've been going ever since then.
So what a journey that we've been on. Yeah. I know a lot of people are sort of bummed out about like, well, what am I going to do until Survivor 32 starts? Like, because basically it's about almost to the day, I think. It's 2 months from when we're recording this. I think, was it February 17th? Something like that is when the premiere is going to be.
Yeah, that's the premiere.
And so if you have not gone on that Evolution of Strategy journey with us and you're looking for a way to fill the Survivor downtime in these next 2 months, we want to give people an opportunity to be able to do that. Of course, you could hear the first chapter of the Evolution of Strategy completely for free.
Free.
At evolutionstrategy.com. That's 6 hours. But the whole journey is some 300
it's
hours.
Like a million hours. This is more hours than we've should have done.
Yeah,
but we did them.
But we did it. So we want to do a special for people in between now and the beginning of the year. So until January 1st, 2016, we are going to take $5 off the Evolution Strategy Volume 1 if you use the discount code. What did we decide to go with? Coven?
Coven in honor of Kimmy Kappenberg of
in honor of Kimmy
Australia.
From the Evolution Strategy Volume 1. We probably did not spend a lot of time on Kimmy Volume 1.
No, because those early chapters were a little bit shorter. And we had no idea. I mean, we often get feedback from people who listen to the Pearl Islands chapter, and they get to the point where we're eulogizing Savage, and we say, yeah, we always hear that Savage is in the mix, but I don't think we'll ever see him, and I don't really want to see him again. So we always hear about that.
But Wimpy little non-leader.
Oh, he would not be thrilled about it. Listen, for the record, I'm thrilled that Savage came back.
Yes.
I'm so happy to have been wrong. But I don't think that we talked too much about Kimmy because we, you know, in that same vein of we don't think that Savage is going to come back, I don't think that it ever occurred to anybody that Kimmy Kappenberg was coming back to Survivor. And once again, I'm very glad she did.
All right. So if you want to check that out, if you want to give that a sample over these next couple of weeks, of course, first chapter is free at evolutionstrategy.com. If you want to get the volume one, which is seasons 1 through 10, taking you all the way through Palau, you could use the discount code Coven, also spelled the same as Coven.
Yes.
C-O-V-E-N. All right. Why don't we start off with some voicemails about Jeremy and his win? And I think that this has been a little bit of a debate going on the Survivor internet today. Let's start off with Karen.
Hi, this is Karen from Tel Aviv. My question is, do you think Jeremy would win the game if his wife weren't pregnant? Thank you so much.
All right, and then let me take this counter email from Gregory.
Hi, Rob. It's Greg from Quebec. I just wanted to know if you think that Jeremy's final speech about Val and his unborn son really helped sway the jury, or if it was already going to be unanimous before that speech. All right, thanks.
So there are a lot of people, probably not so much in RHAP circles, but definitely there has been sentiment that Jeremy only won because of the dropping the bomb that Val was pregnant.
Really?
Yes.
This is a thing?
This is a thing.
This is a thing that's happening?
This is a thing.
Who's saying this?
Have you been to the Survivor Facebook page?
Have I been to the Survivor Facebook page? I have. I do believe that I like the Survivor Facebook page, but I don't really go there too often. I know I'm missing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is a thing that there are some people that are that think that Jeremy only won because of this.
Wow. So this news was powerful enough to secure him 10 out of 10 votes?
10 votes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. I don't know if you read Steven's People blog yet today.
Have I did.
You?
I did.
Yeah, well, he had really great advice for future survivors. He says, fellas, get humping. Start humping. Impregnate a loved one.
Yeah.
He says that's the best move in survivor history. So, you know, that would kind of line up with what these people are saying, right? That, you know, this was really, this was the game clincher.
Yeah.
That's what sealed the deal.
We did this game on last week's show or 2 weeks ago with Ali Lasher, where we went through the Facebook posts.
This is a very good game.
This is from Stephanie Tedeschi on the Survivor Facebook page. This post has 1,111 likes.
Okay.
Says, I'm just stayed up to watch Jeremy win. Having a family doesn't make you a winner. That's not what Survivor is about. Spencer outwit, outplayed, outlasted. Unbelievable. So disappointed.
Wow. I'm disappointed. What's her name? Stephanie?
Stephanie.
Stephanie, I'm disappointed in you.
Nick Simpson says, that speech Jeremy gave at Tribal won him the game. Wish Spencer won, but congrats to Jeremy on his 1 million and sole survivor. 776 likes for that.
Well, that's at least diplomatic.
Yeah, that was pretty diplomatic.
It's incorrect, but at least it's nice.
Yeah.
You know?
426 people liked the post from Peco Alegria, said, what did Jeremy do to deserve to win? Absolutely nothing.
No.
People didn't vote for who played the best game. It was a sympathy vote. Spencer is the real survivor. I don't know why they're all talking about betraying people and blah, blah, blah. They would have done the same. And some of them tried to play the same game Spencer played, but they were dumb and it didn't work out that way. So stop being two-faced. Jeremy sucks. And didn't I say it was a sympathy vote?
Oh my God.
Stop it. Stop it.
You know what? You and I could pick this apart for a long time, no. But I feel like Jeremy already has the response lined up to what these people are saying. I think that
you guys are so dumb.
Yeah. 100%.
Now, 155,000%. This is a bit of a straw man. I'm just saying that I am reading this on the internet, but none of the people that I am interacting with personally are saying this about Jeremy.
It's absurd.
I just thought that this was an interesting thing that there are some people out there that are saying this. But there's no way that, I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, Spencer was going to win. But then Jeremy was like, hey, by the way, my wife is pregnant. Okay, you get all the votes.
You know what that was? It's the bonus balut. You know, it's like his tribe already won immunity. And he just went up and took a bite. Like, he's like, I'm hungry, Jeff. What do you want? And so he's already won, obviously, whether or not you want to say it's unanimous, but he just like takes one last bite out of Spencer and Tasha before he goes with this really great speech.
It was almost too much.
Yeah.
It was almost too much. It was going to be a rout anyway. I mean, did you think there was anybody that was on the fence and that was the closer?
I don't know. I don't think so. It seemed like this was a jury that was voting pretty pro Jeremy. And I think that, you know, going into the tribal council, really the question was, you know, can Spencer eke out some votes? It feels like most of these people are probably not going to be thrilled with Tasha or not super into Tasha's game. I could have seen maybe Steven voting her way or Savage because of the anchor thing. But I really felt to me like, how do people view Spencer's game? And that's the conversation that Wentworth and Jeremy have on the hammock, where she says, I don't know if they're going to respect that. I truly don't right now. You know, they didn't know what the vibe was in the house. So they didn't know how Spencer was going to be. And that's what we were thinking going into that tribal. So I don't know. I don't think that anyone was really on the fence once that jury started asking their questions. It felt to me like everyone was voting for Jeremy well before he started talking about Val.
The one interesting part of it is, and Steven raised this point in his People blog, of if at the final four, if Jeremy decided to take out Spencer and bring Kelly to the end, Steven said in his People blog that Kelly probably wins. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, I mean, we've been hashing that. We hashed that out a little bit on the spot, on the carpet. You know, we could do that again, but I feel like Kelly is a strong contender, if not the winner of the season, if she makes it all the way.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Yeah, if she could have just sneaky-sneakied her way.
But to speak to Steven's point that he mentions in the People blog about all that, it's really, to me, at that final four, it's because of her move and her arguing in front of the jury in that way that I feel like that would score major points for her to be able to sort of leverage that in that spot,
yeah.
which would have ultimately resulted in she had to make a fire and did that in front of the jury. I think she just becomes a real rock star in front of that jury. And I think that's a really close vote between her and Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean...
And then maybe you could argue that the baby thing was sort of would be a closer in Jeremy versus right. Kelly.
As a tiebreaker for something
it's,
close.
It's closing in on 5-5, and maybe there's like one person that Jeremy sways with that and beats Kelly 6-4. I think that that would be a little bit of a different story, but I don't think that... Like, you could, was it going to be 9-1 and it became 10-0?
Right. And I think that, you know, how much do you want to say that this was a strategic move? I mean, there's a strategy behind it, obviously. But do you think that it was just, you know, on some level, Jeremy had this on his mind the whole time and now he can finally say it. Now it's an appropriate venue to talk about it and mm-hmm. to say to some of these people who he's grown close with, hey, by the way, I'm having a kid. It's a son. It's a boy. You know, it seemed like an appropriate venue to get that off his chest. And of course, there's strategic upside for it. But I don't think that it was like a pure strategy thing.
Yeah, I don't think that's ultimately who Jeremy is. And yeah. I think that while it was such a great foil for him to be there with Spencer, because I think that and what Steven was arguing, or at least the point he was making in his People blog, talking about the difference between Jeremy and Spencer, where he says, and I'm using paraphrasing what Steven said, was that, yes, Spencer did go ahead and make bonds with people, but it was a means to an end to advance himself strategically, whereas with Jeremy, you did not feel like that was the case. And maybe it was.
Yeah.
But I don't really know if that was who Jeremy is.
No, and I mean, but also Jeremy, I don't know. I mean,
and maybe I'm being naive to say that a person on Survivor isn't that way, but at least that it's a convincing enough job. And I used the word Spradlin-esque last night to describe Jeremy's social game. And I think that that's the way that people felt about Kim. And maybe, you know, you even had like a few rogues like a Troyzan that was like, can't you guys see what she's doing?
And a very scorned Leaf as well.
Right. But everybody else was like, no, Kim's really my friend.
Right. Yeah. No, people really thought that. And I think that people felt good about Jeremy as well. But what do you think? Where does this stem from, this notion of people thinking that this was just a sympathy vote? I mean, just obviously from people who don't get Survivor. is that it?
I don't know. I think that people, that they were willing themselves that Spencer was going to win.
Yeah.
And they wanted Spencer to win so badly. And I think that's sort of like the justification that they say, like, oh, well, they only did it because of the baby thing.
But I mean, even Spencer, who he was great about this on the carpet. He was the one who said, like, you know, that moment was great. But I had already lost. Like, I had lost before he, like, that's great that he said that, but I had lost the game already.
I mean, he's a smart guy, too.
He's a really smart guy.
He knows what time it is.
He knows what's up. As he said, I thought a really intelligent remark was like, I read the room and I knew that the room was not responding to me. So he knew that well before the Jeremy thing happened.
Okay. Let's take a question from Austin from Australia. We've been tracking this all season long. Let's talk about third time's the charm for the final six.
Hi Rob and Josh, this is Austin from Australia, and I'm calling in once again about Survivor Third Time's the Charm. But first, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for taking my calls all season, even when I hadn't seen the episode yet, or I was hiding from Abby Maria under a desk. It's been such a wonderful feeling to be a part of this community. And I also wanted to thank you, Rob, for all of the hard work you put into all of these wonderful podcasts, this online community, for just doing a great job all year round. And Josh, as well, thank you for filling in on know-it-alls and for being such a big part of why I've fallen in love with listening to podcasts. But without further ado, Jeremy, Keith, Kelly, Kimmy, Spencer, Tasha, who's coming back for a third chance? And in one special case, who's coming back for Survivor Champions? Thanks for taking my calls all season long, and Merry Christmas.
Oh, Austin, first, I just want to say thank you very much. But again, I don't do it for me. I do it for the Survivor family.
Yeah.
I do it for Austin from Australia.
I don't do it for Stephanie Tedeschi.
Yeah, I don't do it for her. The third time's the charm.
Yes.
So Jeremy... Point blank, I asked him this in the exit interview. I think Jeremy's good. If they want it all winter season, maybe, you know.
What does he have to lose? I mean, he would just go out there and have, you know, he could do it again.
He would do well. I think he would do well.
So, I mean, if that was going to be the thing, if it was going to be some high-level concept, I could see...
Winter season.
I could see bringing Jeremy in for sure. Does he have to come back? Certainly he has nothing left to prove. He played a masterful game and he won. Would I love to see him back? Of course. Jeremy's great. We said last night, that guy belongs on television. He's so emotive. Do I think he'll come back?
Snap.
If there's a champion type thing, I think that we could see him again.
Okay. In terms of the rest of the final six, I think Spencer is the most interesting of these people. Spencer said last night and again today, he is not interested in doing Survivor again. Will that hold?
Right.
Will it stay? Is it hollow?
It's hollow. You said this last night as soon as we were done. It's like, nope, they'll be back. I think that Survivor is obviously always going to want Spencer. If there's a season where it's appropriate to bring Spencer back, they're going to try. They'll come knocking on his door, you know, very, very much, very often. It's just whether or not he's going to open the door. I would say if it were, you know, 3 months from now, 5 months from now, a year from now, I would see him saying no, 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 no. But a couple years from now, you might see Spencer back on the show. You might see him interested again. So give it time. I don't think that he is in any rush to get back out there. And no disrespect to him at all. I'm in no rush to see him go back out there. We just had two really great seasons with him involved. He could take a seat on the bench for a little while. But I think that if Spencer wants to go back out there, the door is always open to him. It's just whether or not he wants to walk.
Shut the front door.
No, keep it open. You don't want to shut it.
Shut the front door. Yeah. Open the back door.
Open the back door. Oh, okay.
Open the back door. Let some time go by. Then come back in the back door.
That's the secret?
I think that's the secret.
That's how you do it?
I think that's the move.
Okay.
I think that for Spencer, maybe he needs to be like the Jeff Varner, maybe 14 years.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I mean, he has played a third time. We know this. The future Spencer is real. Maybe we will see an actual future Spencer.
But I've talked about this a lot with you over the 30 season evolution of the game. It is very difficult to come in and be a 20-year-old, 21-year-old, 22-year-old, and have big success in this game. Sure, people have done it, and I actually think that probably as a woman, it's almost easier to do it than a 20-year-old, 21-year-old guy. There has not been a lot of people that have been successful in that spot. There's been a couple.
There have been a few.
There's been a couple. But I think it's hard to sort of be that young of a man and walk away from this and be able to sort of like get one over on people and have them come away and want to reward you with that money. I mean, what was Todd?
Todd was young. He was very young. I don't know the age off the top of my head, but he's 21, 22, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Fabio, obviously very young.
Yeah.
You were very young when you were manipulating everybody in the Amazon.
Yeah. There was a lot of young people on that, younger people on that season.
And I think that that's a thing. I think that I hear what you're saying, and I totally agree. I think we talk a lot about how, you know, if you're in your 30s, that seems to be a sweet spot. But the thing is that this was, you know, Spencer could win as a young lad. You know, he could get to the end and win. He could get to the end and not get shut out. But with this jury was an older, wiser jury. Well, maybe not wiser in some cases, but, you know, it was an older makeup. People in their 30s and their 40s. And so I feel like that's going to be a hard thing to win as a 22-year-old.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting to compare and contrast Spencer here versus Kelly, where I feel like that Kelly in this season was almost like, in some ways, the Spencer of this season, where you had people that you had the underdog that was very easy to root for. And that was more Kelly this season than it was Spencer. And Spencer came away from Cagayan where he didn't win. He ends up in fourth place in that season, but he had like the best time. And Tony was the guy who was like taking a lot of the bullets from people, like getting mad at them. And Spencer was able to walk away from that season and everybody really loved him. And many people still love Spencer in this season. But overall, the experience for him of having to be the person who took bullets, probably more so from his fellow castmates than necessarily from the viewers.
Yeah.
But it was a not fun position for him to be in.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I get it. And the way he was talking about it with you today in the exit interviews, how he was describing it as like a Don Meehan-ish situation and how he can relate to people who have been on the receiving end of some of that bad stuff and how it's not very pleasant. I felt really bad for him. I thought that your interview with him today was really good, too. And I think that Spencer, you know, nurse some wounds, go live your life. He said to us, like, I'd rather focus on winning life than winning Survivor. I think that's awesome. I think he should do that. Absolutely. Can't wait for the Gilmore Girls podcast. And by the time that, you know, some time has passed, I think that he could come back out there and, you know, really examine what went wrong this season for him. And I think that he could have some success. I really, really do. So it's up to him. But the, you know, the option is always going to be on the table.
Real quick, let's talk through some of the other people. I think Kelly is the interesting name
slam
for me
dunk,
for the rest of these people. I was thinking about this today. For me, I think if you were going to make a list of any Survivor woman that we think will be back, if we were going to do a draft of the entire board, Survivor woman most likely to be back in any future season, is she not the number one pick off the board?
She's the Mike Trout.
I don't know. I'm not a fantasy baseball guy.
Yeah,
she is the Vetus in Bishy drafts.
Oh,
the consensus number one pick.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. Is there anybody? Is it close?
No, because a lot of those people were on this season,
right?
And then Wentworth is the breakout, and she's, you know, rightfully so. I think if I were drafting, Wentworth would be number one on the board.
I really think that she would be, and I think that she's almost, I don't want to get too hyperbolic, but I feel like that Survivor has been lacking for, I guess, maybe like post-Parvati, looking for the, you know, strong woman who's good in challenges, who is like a little bit of sass to her.
A lot of bit of sass to Kelly Wentworth.
And it's tough, like you have Kim, who's a winner. And sort of like it's, you know, the Survivor has a bit of a tough time bringing back winners. They've only done it on a couple of different seasons. I feel like that Kelly is in positioned well to be that next, you know, woman returnee.
Right. And I think that, you know, beyond that, it's just that, you know, she played great. Mm-hmm. She gave great confessional. She was very funny with, you know, the kicking down, you know, kicking Terry under the bus type of stuff. She was very vocal, and she cared, and she was passionate, and she was willing to change things up, and she was a hard fighter. And I think that there's just no reason why she wouldn't come back now that we know what Kelly Wentworth is capable of. And I think the great thing for her is I don't feel like she showed anything this season that in the future you would be like, I can't work with Kelly Wentworth. She's got to go immediately.
But I do think that it comes into this, and we talked about this, where she is much more of a present threat that needs to be accounted for.
Correct.
Where this time around, she was able to maneuver to a larger degree with sort of like, okay, we're not worried about her right now. There are bigger fish to fry.
Right. I mean, if you're honestly...
And literally fish to fry.
Yes. If you're on a... This is advice for anyone who is on that future season with Kelly Wentworth. If you're in a challenge... And you're not just watching Kelly Wentworth the entire time, you're doing it wrong. You know, at least keep one eye on Kelly Wentworth at all challenges, because you just don't know what she's going to pull. But I think that that's a great way of putting it. She is a present threat that needs to be accounted for. I don't think that she's like we got to take her down immediately, but we need to watch Kelly Wentworth. She's one of the dangerous players in this game. We now know what she's capable of. We had no idea what she was capable of coming out of San Juan del Sur. Now we know she was one ball away from winning the whole thing.
Sneaky, sneaky.
In terms of the other players that are in the mix, Tasha 3.0.
I don't know. I think that she would love to do it. I don't know what's left for Tasha. Do you have a strong feeling about seeing Tasha back?
I would say that we saw her get to the end in a season. I kind of agree with that. I don't know what is left to see.
Yeah, I mean, if she does the same kind of introspection that Spencer could do, and like looking at where did my game go wrong, you know, it could be interesting to see like, okay, so I've gotten to the end. I didn't get any votes. No one was on my side. How do I change that? What do I do to fix that situation? But I think that she's, you know, and to her credit, I think she's very proud of her experience.
Yeah.
You know, that's great. Can't take that away from her. But she, you know, she's been asked like, would you have cut Jeremy at the final four ever? It's like not even a consideration. And I think she's very proud of that. And if that's the way it is, then I don't know that she would come back and play very differently. But who knows? You know, I don't really see it. It's not off the table for me, but I think that of the people we've discussed so far, the least likely.
I feel like she's up for it. And considering that a lot of these players that we've talked to coming out of this season are not up for it, I think that at least it's more of a possibility than some of these other people.
Not completely off the table.
Keith Nail, I feel like he's done.
I think he's done, and I think that's fine. And I say that as the founding member of the Nail Males.
Keith Nail is the modern day Big Tom.
I've said he's the modern day Rudy. You want to go Big Tom?
He's the modern day Big Tom because Rudy was a phenomenon. Rudy really had one run. Keith Nail, he has two runs that are somewhat similar to the run that Big Tom has in Africa.
Yeah.
And then in All Stars, he gets down to the end. Big Tom goes out probably under, you know, some more acrimonious circumstances in the All Stars than Keith Nail ultimately goes out here.
Yeah.
But I think that he has two runs. And where he potentially, just like Big Tom in the first season, if he gets to the end, he probably wins. Second time around, I don't know necessarily if, you know, I think that it's a little bit different circumstances where the jury probably would vote for Big Tom if he got to the end of the All-Stars, but he's, you know, in between a rock and a hard stone with like basically like boxed out on both sides of in a scenario with the final two, and he's like the third person on both sides. But that being said, yeah, I think that he's just a very lovable guy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. I think that I would say a little more Rudy-esque just because I think their games are more similar. Like, I think Big Tom is sneakier than Keith. Mm-hmm. I think Big Tom is probably more outside the box strategic.
Big Tom's more of the wolf in sheep's clothing, whereas Keith is probably more of a sheep in sheep's clothing.
Oh,
but... I'm not trying to be insulting, but Keith Nail is more, he is what he is, where Big Tom like wants you to think he's slower.
Yeah. Tom's a bit of a con man. You know, he's got that. And I think it could have potentially worked in All-Stars. You know, I think that there's more to him than meets the eye. And with Keith, like with Rudy, what you see is what you get. And that's not to, you know, knock either of them in terms of their game. They're very meat and potatoes types of survivors. You know, find a group, stick with it, ride it to the end, be good in challenges, be good around camp. Hope that earns you something at the end. So I don't know. I love Keith. I thought that Keith, I was a little bummed that we weren't getting a ton of Keith throughout the season. I think that really turned up towards the end, and he had an incredible finale to the point that even though he doesn't play that idol at the Final Five Tribal Council, and that's where he's going to go, and you know he's going to go there because of course that's what's about to happen. There's this great moment where he's talking about, this might just work, ha 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 ha, and the ha ha ha's are fading into Tribal Council away from camp. So it's just like the great final laughter of Keith Nail. So as a big Keith Nail fan, I'm really satisfied with his Survivor journey. I don't think that there's anything more for that guy to prove, unless they actually do Survivor Keithville. And it's just like Keith and a bunch of people who are huge Keith fans.
Oh, I was going to say, we bring back like Keith Famey?
Yeah. Yeah. And the other Keith. What was his last name? The Hawk.
Duncan.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
And then we have Kimmy. Yeah. We have Kimmy. 3.0 for Kimmy?
I don't know. I don't.
I kind of feel like we saw it.
Yeah, I don't know that we did. I think that there was more to show.
There was more to show.
Yeah, I think that we...
And Kimmy was very fun in the interviews that we did with her, but I don't feel like necessarily the show is dying to get her back.
I agree. I think that that's the thing. But I think that in terms of her gameplay, I think that there could be more to show. That, you know, her final hurrah is going to be legendary. We're going to be talking about that forever. So there's been a feeling of, you know, if you're looking at the secret scenes, if you're hearing people in their exit interviews talking about, we want Kimmy to win, there's a feeling that there was more than meets the eye there that we weren't really served up. So if, on that level, like maybe what I would like to see is like the bonus scenes of Kimmy. I'd like to see a little bit more of what she was doing, but I don't think that she's going to get to come back for a third time.
But I feel like Survivor would probably roll the dice with somebody else of trying to find the next Kimmy as opposed to go back and do a third time with Kimmy. Like,
hey, I hear T-Bird's available.
Right. Do this T-Bird second time around instead of the Kimmy third time around.
I agree. But I mean, listen, I'm very happy with what we got out of Kimmy in her final Tribal Council. That was incredible stuff.
All right, let's take another question. And this is a question from Anthony. And he wants to know about our first reactions to the season as a whole and its winner. Here's Anthony.
What's going on, Rocking Robin Josh? This is Anthony calling. And let's talk about season rankings and winners ranking. Now the season is over. How do you guys think the winner of this season will fare in Rob's The Evolution of Strategies winners ranking list? And the season overall, how do you guys think this season will rank amongst the other 30 seasons? Anyway, I have to run now because I need to get a haircut. My hair is moldy, otherwise Abby Maria will call me a clown. Bye, Brochacho.
See you, Brochacho. You're moldy.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's great. All right. So, yeah, that's a big, meaty question. This is something, if you don't listen to the Evolution of Strategy, it's something that Rob does. He ranks the winners at the end of every chapter.
Yes. And so before we get into that, let's just talk about the season ranking overall. That we had been talking about this a little bit on the podcast last week. I think originally Dalton Ross said that he ranked it 8th. Did he update that today?
I don't know if he updated it, but he did say 8.
8 was originally, and I want to say, I thought I read that he bumped it up to 5 following the finale.
Oh, okay. So he put a top 5 baby.
Top 5 baby.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, we'll see. That is, yes, that is confirmed. Number 5.
Number
top 5 baby.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a really killer finale. So if that, and I think that that's what he was waiting on, was like, how's the finale going to deliver? It was great. It was
and bumping down Survivor of the Amazon to number 6.
Oh, wow. And Dalton Ross officially bumped down in your rankings of the Survivor Press.
No. Season 6, it's number 6. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, we're holding steady in the
you're
top
good.
6.
You're
baby.
In a good you're in a good spot.
Yeah.
My brother just watched Survivor of the Amazon for the first time.
Yeah, what did he say?
He told me to give you a fist bump.
Oh,
big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, thanks.
He loved it. He said it was the best season he's seen so far. He's hopping around all over the place, not watching in order for the first time. And he loved the Amazon.
All right, what about your rankings for Survivor Cambodia? Do you have it as high as Dalton Ross?
I could see the argument for top 5. I don't know yet. And it's only because there's so many seasons that I really, really love. This finale was incredible. I think it's easily top 10. I just don't know where in the 10, and I don't know if it cracks the 5 for me. I really have to think it through. I think that for most people, it is going to be a top 10 at the very least. I think that there's a lot of people, you know, the people who are more focused on storytelling might not have it quite as high. But I think for me, especially with that finale and with the uniqueness of that final 6 tribal council, and just the way that this was such a hard fought game and so much was invested in it because we voted this cast onto it, or, you know, we've got a lot of our people onto it. So I feel like it's going to go down in the books as one of the most special seasons of the show. And I think the top 10 for sure.
Top 10 for sure. I think it's really high up there. I think, you know, going by my level 1, level 2, level 3, I think you probably have about like 7 level 1 episodes,
yeah,
not tribal councils in this thing across the way. So that's really high up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think if you have it in your top 5, I could definitely see
totally.
It grades out there. I think it's definitely top 7, top 8 for sure.
Yeah.
And we'll see how history holds up now.
Yeah, I think it would probably be like at 6-ish at the worst for me.
Now, Jeremy as a winner, I think this is a really interesting conversation to have. And we touched on this a little bit last night, because when you go back and you take a look, and I asked Jeremy, what do you think was your biggest move in the game, just from a sheer like Richter scale, not Lindsay Richter scale, mm-hmm, but if you were going to look at what was the biggest move, you say probably playing the idol for Steven, and that you could argue whether or not that was ultimately a thing that helped him. And Jeremy said last night when we talked to him about this that it did. Going back to sort of like the 49 laws of strategy of like make compelling spectacles, he said that the people in the game really respected that he sussed it out. That was what was going to happen.
Right.
And he protected an ally, which ultimately he felt like paid dividends for him in the game. But in terms of like big flashy moves, other than that, there's not really a lot there. And I was sort of like trying in my head to compare Jeremy to other winners. And the guy that I came up with that I thought he probably played the most like, and somebody who I thought really was one of the stronger winners when we did our rankings of the winners, what do you think of comparing Jeremy to Tyson in Blood versus Water?
Well, we know that he loves Tyson. He's a huge Tyson fan. This is fun. Let's play this out, because the natural comparison is the JT thing that's being talked about a lot. But let's talk about another winner who comes from Token Jeans. So let me hear it.
I think Jeremy was a lot like Tyson, and probably the comparison to Tyson was more like Tyson in San Juan del Sur, because again, that's the Blood versus Water season, and Jeremy loses his loved one right off the bat, just like Tyson does in that season,
right,
where Val is ending up going out second, and just like Rachel ended up going out second. I think we probably had that conversation at that time of, could Jeremy pull a Tyson? And then Nadia, of course, it goes out first in that season, and he ends up partnering up with Natalie. And it's like, oh, that's sort of like the Tyson and Jervis thing.
Right.
But here, the way that this ends up going down the stretch, I feel like that for Jeremy, he ends up having Tasha, who is kind of like his Jervis. And then also, I think that Spencer kind of ends up being the Monica Culpepper in this scenario.
Interesting. Oh, he won't like that.
He's not going to like that, but what's in it? But what's best for Monica?
What's best for Spencer?
Because where Spencer is, just like Monica, is always the person who's sort of like having that flirtation with the other side of like, are they going to flip? Are they not going to flip? But ultimately, like Tyson and Jervis knew, Monica is going to stick with us.
Right.
And that was sort of, they had that, they knew that they were going to be the final three. And so in that way, and Tyson ends up having to make a bigger move in that game. The vote out of Aris, that Jeremy just doesn't have that on his resume in this season.
No,
that
I mean, it
that
happens.
Was done for him.
Right, right. The Savage thing happens, and then he's like, okay, the game is open.
Yeah. And in that way, that was what we talked about, like, where that in some ways you can compare that to Cochran, where he has Phillip taken out for him. So Jeremy didn't really have to make any big maneuvers after that. But just like Tyson had to do, that he had to sort of like maneuver the ship to get to the final three with his people and sort of having to fend off these insurgents in down the stretch the same way that Tyson had to. So I feel like from a managerial perspective, that it was very similar to what they had to both do in the post-merge game. And then both of those guys have an emotional final tribal council.
Yeah.
And both of those guys have big blowouts. If not for Vetus, Tyson is going to end up also getting all of the votes, where Jervis really can't mount an argument, just like Tasha can't really say why she could win over Jeremy. And then you have where they're both happy for the person that won. Jervis is like pretty happy for Tyson.
Sure.
And so is Monica. Monica's probably happier for Tyson than Spencer is for Jeremy, but I'm sure that Spencer likes Jeremy as a guy. So I do think that there's a lot of similarities to how both of those guys had to play, especially in the post-merge.
Yeah. And I think what else is fun about that, if I'm going based purely on memory and just thinking about where the placement would be, you would probably put him behind Tyson.
Yeah, I think probably not as good as Tyson. Even though Tyson played with half All-Stars, Jeremy played with all All-Stars.
Right.
But I feel like that the degree of difficulty was not really a factor in terms of, like, you know, we didn't penalize somebody like a Kim or Boston Rob
for because of the field.
The field.
Right,
right.
Right.
But I do think that it's at least worth mentioning.
Right. And this is all very preliminary. The official ranking will come in 2020 in volume four. But just in my head, I think this is fun because I believe that that would put him right ahead of Natalie. So he would be paired up with Natalie. He'd be right next to her.
And that would be a fun conversation to have of Jeremy versus Natalie, because I feel like that Jeremy's game was probably more of a complete game from start to finish, where Natalie's game really only begins around the time that Jeremy gets voted out of the game. I don't want to say it's like a Nalia thing where it's like, oh, she started playing on day 24.
Right.
She was playing from the time that she went to Exile Island with Baylor and stuff like that. But I feel like that Natalie really has like a great sprint to the end.
Right.
More sort of like Cochran's game, where it's like at that's like around that same point in time where they go from, and you could even argue like somebody like myself in the Amazon, where it's just like a break for daylight from a certain point in the game. So,
and Jeremy doesn't really have that. I mean, it's pretty three C's for a lot of it. I mean, he survives that crazy final six tribal. But a lot of it is, you know, depending on, you know, more of a delicate balancing act.
I'd say that Jeremy is better than Natalie, but that's really just off the top of my head, and I'd have to really sort of dig into it.
Well, not official yet, but that's a preview of something to come in 5 years.
Okay. So let's go to Matt from Sacramento, and he wants to get a little heady talking about this final six. Okay, so get like Abby Maria, get out your notes.
Oh, God.
Okay. So we're going to talk about something, and we're going to do a really deep dive, and tell me if you think that what Matt is saying is making sense.
Hey, Robin, Josh. This is Matt from Sacramento. Great job on the red carpet last night. Fantastic finale and a fantastic season. But my question is about the final six last night. Did that tribal council not expose a serious flaw in the game? When we know the top three were all going to be voting for Kimmy after the idols are played, the bottom three are all forced to vote for Tasha. But that's not in their best interest. Their best interest is to all vote for Keith, including Keith. So then, once the tiebreaker occurs, Kelly goes opposite the top three, whichever way they want to unanimously vote out. Kelly refuses. Then Keith and Kimmy are immune. Kelly, Jeremy, and Spencer are immune, and Tasha is the one left out. So, Does Survivor need to make a rule change? Do you need to be able to vote for yourself in the future? Love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, man.
Where's Jeff Probst with the whiteboard to talk about this?
Yeah, we can't do this without him. We need him in the room. He's the knowingest know-it-all.
Before we dive into talking about that, did you like the way that the show handled that?
I loved it.
Yeah.
In terms of explaining it to the audience?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that that was a really fun moment. And I just loved the bravado of Probst. You know, I thought that Probst was hilariously fired up in that moment where he's just like, that's reason 322 why Survivor is so hard to win.
Jeff's really worked up during these live finales. And
something that
we caught on to during the like rewatching of these finales. I think the first one they do like this is Kagyan. I guess this is four in a row that they've done this way. Jeff, when he opens the show, says something almost every time, or at least three out of the four times, that he talks about like, we're live. Call your friends.
Yeah.
He said it again last night.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, who's calling people? Like, hey, Survivor finale is on. Just want to remind you.
Yeah, I don't know if you got the memo, if you forgot.
Like, I do think that comes off a little desperate of sort of like, make sure everybody you know knows that this show is on right now.
Right.
Call people.
Do you think that was the turnoff? I guess the finale ratings were slightly lower than usual. And because like people were like, I see through that.
I just think that the modern day is like tell people on social media.
Yeah, tweet.
So tweets. I wonder if that's more of just like as we had the whole thing between where that Steven was outed for saying alliances instead of voting blocks. Where he's like, well, that's just sort of like a colloquialism.
Right.
So I think
the illogism.
Yeah.
No, that's funny. It's just, you know, he's got like a roster of things that he says that are just
call
never
your friends.
Yeah.
Watch Survivor.
Yeah, call your friend or go to the person on the street. You know, he's got his favorite things and I love it. I would never take it away from
him. So should Keith Nail and the bottom three, should they have been able to all vote for Keith Nail?
Including Keith?
Yes.
But that opens up such a can of worms. You know, to allow people to vote for themselves, that feels bad. I don't like where we're going when we start walking down that path. You know, that really, for like the person who really just wants to get out of there, is like, I'm out. I'm voting myself. Or if like they're trying to do an easy vote. I'm voting for myself.
I'm kind of open to this.
Nah.
Like, what if we just came into Survivor 32 or 33 and we just said, and for the first time, we're giving Survivor the opportunity, you could vote for yourself.
But why?
Who knows why? I mean, it could open all sorts of strategic possibilities.
But you have to sell that in a way. Like, you have to present that information on a storytelling level in a way that makes sense. Like, why are we introducing that rule into the game? And I can't see how you sell that. It just sounds so backwards.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Like Survivor Reverse Island?
I mean, I feel like that there's some... I don't know.
Survivor
like,
opposite World's Day?
I'm sure somebody could come up with a reason why, and as Matt did. I don't know if necessarily if we needed it specifically for this, but I think it could be interesting. And then again, that's something for another think tank along the way.
Yeah. I don't know if I would send it to Samoa.
One thing that I do think would have helped this, and even I was like, oh, wait, hold on, what's going on? I feel like that they should have said in that tribal council, and again, in the moment, and I mean, I'm sure like things are going like 600 miles an hour. I think that Jeff should have said, now, normally in this circumstance, we would have a rock draw between, it would be, I guess, Keith, Jeremy, and Kelly. But due to the fact that Jeremy and Kelly both played immunity idols, Keith would be the only person that would be drawing a rock, and that's why he's eliminated. Like, I felt like they sort of just, like, skipped over that, and they just sort of said, well, and then it'll be Keith is the one that goes home because Jeremy and Kelly play the idols.
Well, I thought he articulated that when he broke out the board in the room. I think that he...
Right, but I don't think that we had that in the scene.
Sure. Sure. But, I mean, that was obviously the logic. I think that, you know, it was fine because we do get that Probst moment. The fact that Probst coaches us through it is it's a make good on them. But no, I mean, if Keith could have voted for himself, I mean, I think it would have been hilarious. It would have been great. I mean,
sure.
He almost did vote for himself.
Yeah.
He was very close.
I think that things were just moving by so fast. I don't think that the players there were able to even conceptualize what was going on. And again, we're talking about like after 36 days of a brutal season of Survivor, and we're having a hard time like wrapping our heads around it, and we're totally like well-fed, not a lot of rest,
right?
But sort of like in somewhat better conditions of to be able to analyze Survivor, and we're having a hard time like right. sort of wrapping our heads around it.
Yeah, but I mean, the way that Keith was talking about it to you, he basically was like, I wanted to leave because it was taking so long. Like, I just wanted to get out of there.
It was so funny to me just to sort of like to think about from the people that were there, just trying to like explain it to Keith, so what now?
I wish that the cameras were on.
Yeah.
You know, like, I wanted to see that scene. I wanted to see Probst in his, like, you know, his think tank. I wanted to see the brain trust of Survivor scrambling to figure out what happened there. I think that that's an amazing story that I would love to get to the bottom of.
And someday when there's an oral history of Survivor,
yeah,
that'll be really, really fun to
great
talk about.
Great chapter. Great chapter.
Yeah. It'll be a great, great moment just to go back and talk about this. So it was just to be there for history. It was just really, really fun
it
last
was cool.
night.
Yeah.
Let's take one from somebody that we ran into last night. Mikey the Chimp has a question for us. Here's Mikey.
Rob and Josh, Mikey the Chimp, as great a joy as attending that Survivor finale last night. The dessert was getting to see live Survivor know-it-alls as my red carpet neighbor. Great job. I have a question I want to reach back about how Wentworth could have gone all in at Final Five. Two alternate scenarios that I haven't heard discussed yet. Scenario A, what if she had taken off the immunity necklace and given it to Keith at Tribal Council? And when everyone freaked out, she said, it's fine, because I found a hidden immunity idol, and then tried to go for it that way. Alternatively, in option B, what if she had said, I found a hidden immunity idol, and I'm giving it to Keith, and did that at Tribal Council, and let the dust settle there, and let Keith freak out? He would have believed it was a real idol. And then, maybe this is fan fiction, but I would have thought that Spencer or Tasha or Jeremy would have looked at those two and then said, if that's real Kelly, switch. Switch. You give him the necklace. He gives you the idol, and we'll go with you. Fan fiction? Too deep in the swimming pool?
He had me right up until the end.
the switch?
Yeah, the fan fiction part, I don't know.
I think that's really interesting, and I feel like we're getting into all of these scenarios where we're just like going to have all of like these gunfights at Tribal Council, and it's like, is the gun real or not?
Right. Well, you brought this up with Kelly last night, this idea of why don't you do the Mike Holloway and Shireen thing and, you know, break out the idol at Tribal Council.
Well, there's a couple different scenarios that we're talking about here. So, the one that I mentioned last night was I wanted to know why didn't Kelly take out the idol and say, I'm playing this for Keith tonight.
Right. Yeah, and I think she kind of poo-pooed that because she was saying that, you know, she has her style of how she plays idols and everybody knows that. But she had only played two idols.
I thought that was, a little too much in her head about,
listen, Kelly,
about that. Like, everybody knows that's not how
Queen Wentworth rolls. Listen, love you,
everybody
Kelly.
Everybody would know. Yeah. That would be a tell.
Yeah, that's thin. You know, Kelly's great, but come on. Come on. I think that if she shows up there and if she owns the Tribal Council, she shows up to that Tribal Council and pulls some sort of Malcolm type of move of like, hey, so it would look like Keith is the guy going home tonight, except I'm badass Queen Wentworth and I found another idol. And then she takes it out and puts it on Keith's neck. And Keith's like, golly, I got one of these fancy idols now. I guess one of you guys are in trouble. And then they can start making some moves from there.
Yeah. And then what are they saying? Are they doing the Mike Holloway and say, like, we're voting for somebody. I guess we don't know who it is. Or are they saying like, hey, we're voting for Jeremy tonight?
That's where it gets tricky. That's where you can have some fun with it. But I think as a starting point, I think that Kelly should not be telling Keith about this idol and putting it in his hands to play that move, because as we saw, guy's not going to do it.
Because I think that what we've seen is that I almost feel like survivors have sort of like figured that move out. I think that what we would see is that Jeremy and Spencer and Tasha would vote for Keith anyway and call his bluff.
You think so?
I think that they would.
You think that Spencer would? Even in that situation, you think that Spencer was so hooked into the Jeremy and Tasha thing that he wouldn't flip there?
That's an interesting thing.
Because
yeah.
I think that he is the guy who is probably self-interested enough.
I think that why Spencer didn't consider, and Steven really talked about this in the People blog as well, why didn't Spencer go with them at Final Five?
Right, because it's a great question. It was something you and I were talking about at the finale. We were waiting for that segment to come up, and we were like, all right, so Kelly has to go to Spencer and try to make a move on Jeremy right now. I feel like there's something there. Like, if Kelly does that and says, like, we're voting for Jeremy and Spencer, it is in your best interest to do this now. Because if you let Jeremy go all the way to the top, I know you think you've got a shot. You don't. No one has a shot against Jeremy. Tonight's the night to take him out.
The interesting thing that Mikey brings up is the idea of making Keith think it's a real idol.
Right,
so
exactly.
Was that a bad move to tell Keith, especially that Kelly is born out of San Juan del Sur, and sort of like the first rule of Keith Nail is don't overcomplicate it for him. So now when you tell Keith this idol isn't real, and right. He still was like kind of confused whether or not it was real or not. And I really couldn't wrap my head around like, oh, wait, so, but you thought it was fake, but you thought there was a chance it was real, but you didn't play it.
Right.
Like, well, I didn't want to go out like that.
Right.
That was a cheap way to play. And I'm like Ryan Aiken.
Yeah.
But so what if Kelly says to Keith, like, here's the real idol. And you know that Keith Nail, like, in that he would have his tells about having the real idol coming down the stretch. Now, again, he did have the real idol in San Juan del Sur, and nobody really knew about it until Reed went through his bag. But you have to feel like the way that he would be acting, he would now be acting as though he had the real idol.
Right.
And then acting in a way that would make Jeremy and Spencer and Tasha react as though, oh my God, Keith has the real idol. And then that would force them to make that, rather than Keith having to act as though he had the real idol, where I feel like that there would be more of a chance for a mistake or a stick to the plan through Keith's acting. Because Jeremy mentioned when I spoke to him, I'm not sure if it was this morning or last night, it's all getting blended together, when he talked about how that he knew Keith didn't have a real idol, because when he mentioned, hey, let's vote out Tasha, that now Keith was sort of like, okay, let's go with this plan. He's like, he doesn't have a real idol.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great read, and Josh on Jeremy's part. I think so. Are you suggesting that Kelly does this still earlier in the day, and earlier in the day comes to him and says, hey, here's the idol. This is real.
Yeah, I think that sort of at this point, you're going to put the fake money into circulation,
right,
and have Keith, you know, walking around thinking that he has the real idol. And then if Keith Nail ultimately goes out, like, the reason maybe you end up getting burned is that when Keith Nail goes out and he's like acting like Randy, like playing like the fake idol, and then he gets voted out in that scenario, maybe he goes on to the jury and is a little burned up about it.
Right. I think that one of the things that would be attractive to me about Kelly springing this on, having this happen at tribal councils, mm-hmm. it's in front of the jury, so it's a show for them, and it's impressive for them, and that's a point in your favor. And I think one of the beautiful, beautiful things about Keith is he's so immediately authentic. And so the level of surprise that would register on Keith Nail as he's bestowed what he believes to be a very real idol is going to be a big moment that is going to get Spencer and Jeremy and Tasha flustered. There's going to be no room for wondering if Keith doesn't know the thing or not. So I think that I completely agree with the idea of you shouldn't include Keith in this plan. I think that you shouldn't. I don't think that you want Keith to. I don't think you want Keith to feel like he's part of a ruse. He doesn't like that to begin with, and he's not very good at covering those things.
Right.
So whether you want to talk about giving it to him earlier in the day and making him believe that it's a real idol, I could entertain that. I really like the idea of giving it to him at tribal council and not including him in the plan at all. And what's the risk that, you know, he does look a little bit like Randy at the end of the day? He'll get over it. He'll figure it out, and you can explain that if you get to the top.
It's tough. I kind of feel like that if you do it the way at tribal council, the way that other people have done that bluff before, or that, like, where Mike Holloway wasn't bluffing, but he wasn't actually going to use the idol on Shireen, so it was, to some degree, a bluff, I kind of feel like that the players are still going to ultimately think, you know, just keep up with, you know, stick to the plan for right. them. Whereas I feel like if it happened during the day, I feel like there'd be more of like a, like Spencer has a chance to think about it. Like, do I really want to go down like this? Do I really like, why don't I just flip my vote as opposed to just having to everybody make a decision at tribal council where I feel like people sort of just like, okay, let's just hope for the best.
Right. Right. I think that there's pros and cons to this bit of it too, but they had just come back from one of the craziest tribal councils of all time, you know, that had happened not 24 hours earlier. So maybe, you know, there's going to be a level of like, well, at this point, anything could freaking happen. It's totally plausible that Kelly has an idol. So I don't know, a lot to chew on there as well. Again, great finale because there was so much, there were so many possibilities, so many different directions it could have gone.
Okay. Let's take a question that is in regards to coming out of our experience from the finale. This is from Jordan.
Hey, what's up, Rob? It's Jordan from Vancouver. So what an amazing Survivor finale we just saw. And with so many great moments, do you think it would be cool to cut in the audio from the live studio audience so you get to hear all those reactions going on at the same time? I know it's something you talked about in the past, and I'd love to hear your thoughts now. Thanks a lot. Peace.
We talked about this a lot with the Apprentice finale. You know, we used to podcast about the Apprentice around here.
Once upon a time.
Yes. Before that was like a really big deal. All those wacky times of watching the Apprentice, who would have thought that we were just sort of like, what we were on the heels
yeah.
of.
Yeah. Well, I assume that podcast will be different, but it'll be back next year.
Yeah. So in terms of pumping in the crowd noise, boy, I kind of feel like I've always been a proponent of that they should do it. But after last night, I couldn't even hear the show. Like, the crowd was so crazy at the finale. I almost feel like it would have taken you out of it to have there just be like a raucous applause at the time that Jeremy is playing his idol and Kelly's playing her idol. It was just nuts.
Yeah, no, great in the room, really funny in the moment. You know, those are all the expected moments of big applause and big laughter and big cheers and everything like that. But one of my favorites of the night was right away when Keith comes back to camp after the Abby vote and is like, I would have wanted to go to the end with her. I don't want to go with Spencer or Jeremy. And Spencer's like, well, that's why I did it. And there was just a lot of laughter in support of the young lad kind of taking apart Keith's strategy, but that wouldn't play. That wouldn't play back home.
Mm.
It was really funny in the moment and in the room, but I don't think that it would play. I think it would be very strange to have that.
And even the Jeremy and Keith scene where Jeremy's like trying to get Keith's attention, like
yes.
that got laughs. Like, you would have thought that you were at whatever, you know,
like a Gallagher show, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Just like that.
Yeah.
A Katie Gallagher show,
yes.
even. So it was just like, you know, so electric in the room, but almost like to the point, like almost too much.
Yeah. 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 So it was great to experience, but I think it'd be really hard to convey that on television.
All right. Let's go ahead and take this question from Doug.
Hey, Rob. It's Doug Potter calling from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Can we just take a minute to appreciate Nicole Sesternino on yet another winner's pick? That's Fabio, Kim, Mike, and now Jeremy on top of some Big Brother picks. You think she'd like to pick my FanDuel for this week? See you later, bro, Chacho.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
It's like one of these things where they have like, you know, like a chicken is able to like predict like football games or something like that. Damn.
Yeah.
But the Nicole thing, I don't really know what's going on there. I'm sure that there is like some people that think like, okay, oh, Nicole must like be on top of like the spoilers or something like that. And
wait, is Nicole Redmond?
Yes, yes. But if people think that Nicole cares enough to go and look up a Survivor spoiler, like they do not know Nicole.
Yeah. Like, I just love the idea though of Nicole as like some Kaiser Soze who like just is like secretly just like is putting on this front, but just knows everything yeah.
but here,
Survivor.
Here I am up here watching, you know, 30 seasons of Survivor, podcasting, you know, 5 hours a week about every episode. Here's Nicole, who's like not even necessarily like watching the show every week. It's like, oh yeah, this is the winner.
It's so good. But that's great.
So ridiculous. So ridiculous. But yeah, she was really bragging about
You were saying on the podcast today.
Yeah. Even last night when we were at the show, I got a text from her. She's like, I did it. I'm like, you did what?
She's
like, I picked the winner again.
She got Jeremy the win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in total, like, you know, since Rob is a podcast star, I believe Nicole has predicted Fabio, Kim Sprodlin.
Okay.
And then I think then she's on a hot streak here now with Mike Holloway and Jeremy.
Wow. So she is going to be
like 4 out of 11 seasons. It's like that's a really, you know,
that's like, really good. That's like being one of like the elite immunity challenge winners. Of, like, you get 5 immunities in a row. She's close. She's like, right at the door.
Yeah, it's rather improbable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think that you could probably like in any given season, like probably eliminate like there's like 5 people that, you know, definitely aren't going to win. But still, even that out of the all the possible winners, like, you know, if you want to say it's like a 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 15, like, you know, if it was just luck. You know, she's doing a good job with
that. That's great. That's really funny.
It's going to be very fun when we preview season 32. And I do really look forward to digging into her process of how she makes that
thing. Yeah, that's going to be a podcast that you're not going to want to miss.
Should be very fun. Okay, and let's do one more voicemail question. This is from our good buddy, Shut Up Tim.
Yes.
What's up, bro chachos? I just wanted to call in and tell you guys this was a really great season. I really enjoyed the finale. But really, I want to say thank you guys for all the hard work you do. And specifically, I want to say thank you to Josh. You did an excellent job filling in for Know-It-Alls this season. And we really appreciate hearing you, everything you do on post-show recaps, and the evolution of strategy. So just wanted to say thank you, and I hope you enjoy this little ditty I came up with for you. Josh was the best. Replacement all, while filling in for Steven this fall, because Josh was the best. Replacement all, jumped right in and answered Rob's call, because Josh was the best. Replacement all, you did a really great job. And Rob was okay, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow. There is at least there's a portion of the audience that is truly saying shut up, Tim. Like, oh, you're wrong about you're wrong again. Tim, I appreciate it, Tim. Thank you so much.
Yeah, really, this season, the music has been pouring in from our listeners. Because last week we had the competition between Shut Up, Tim, and our new composer, Eric, who's been writing stuff.
Yeah.
He wrote the breakout hit Call Me Abby last
week. That was very good.
That was very good.
Very good.
So I think that Eric was feeling good, and he went back to the well.
Oh, God.
That's what happens sometimes. You know, you go to the casino and you win.
Yeah, so
and
you feel
like
do it again.
Next weekend, like, well, let me just go back to the casino and win more money.
Yeah, you've got like the taste. You can't satisfy it with anything else.
So Eric is back, and there was a line where Spencer said, I believe it was in the final 4 Tribal Council, about how Jeremy blurred a lot of the lines this season. Jeremy blurred the lines.
Oh.
And Eric,
where's this going?
Got back to work real quick. Tell me if you think he struck gold again.
Wait, before you play this, are we going to get sued for having this particular song on there?
No, I think we're okay.
It's controversial, right?
Okay. Here's Jeremy's blurred lines.
Everybody vote chair. Everybody vote chair. If you can't tell what your alliance is, if you can't trust the folks you did last vote, maybe it's voting blocks, maybe it's hidden idols, maybe Keith's out of his mind. Okay, now Spence was close, tried to manipulate me, but he's a cyborg, maybe it's in his features. No way he out-debates us, I don't have no haters. That man is just a faker. That's why I'm gonna take a goat too. I knew you'd pick me.
All right, I don't know. What do you think of that?
It really killed me in the beginning.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I think probably is not capturing the greatness of Call Me Abby, but we do applaud the effort.
Yeah, no. There was some very funny stuff in there.
Now, then that's not all.
This is a cyborg.
That's not all.
Oh, no.
Our longtime buddy, Aaron Robertson, he got back to work with his composing partner, Jordan Kalish. And they're the real Simon and Garfunkel of Survivor parodies.
A real great duo.
Real great duo. They were the masterminds behind the What Does the Llama Say a couple of years ago.
A classic.
They got back to work, and here is their latest. Just go with it.
Oh, no.
This time, we're doing something different. It's what we've always done. Hello, Peachy. I was wondering if you knew where Abby's bracelet could be. The Brazilian firecracker. If you F with her, you're dead. Just ask Shireen Savage and Jeff Farner. Hello, Bro Chachos. They're in Cambodia playing.
Right, so then, it takes a
Don't stop.
Okay.
And after getting all our votes a second chance to prove that they could choose the right voting block and when to make big moves. Sierra told us.
Okay, so then it does, so it takes a turn.
Oh, God.
Then once we get to the chorus, it goes in a little bit of a different direction.
Okay. Let's hear it. Yeah.
So hang in there, okay?
Now watch me spit. Let me ride that toto. Now watch me spit. Let me ride that toto. Ooh, the we, that will reign supreme. Key, logic, Kelly. Watch them.
Okay. So I will upload the full version of this on the Reality TV Rehap Ups YouTube channel. We'll try to get that embedded on the page.
That's pretty special. That was really funny.
Really, a lot of music.
It's the voice of an angel. Oh my God. I'm impressed.
Hello. Peachy.
Oh, that's really, really wonderful.
Hello. PG.
Yeah.
Did you run into PG at all last night?
I did run into PG last night.
Yes, how was that?
It was a little awkward. It's a little uncomfortable.
Why? What's the story
all
there?
Right. Well, I mean, okay, so if you haven't listened to The Evolution of Strategy, and I didn't really fawn over her too much over here in Cambodia because she was only in three episodes, and I was also trying to be a profesh.
Yeah.
Professional brachacho. I had a bit of a crush on her in The Evolution of Strategy, Chapter 15, covering China.
Past tense?
No, still do. She's the best. But I was very creepy about it and very awkward about it.
Hello, Peachy.
Yeah. And basically, that's the musical embodiment. Like, Wanda would belt that out right now. Hello, Peachy. Yeah, that was basically the sentiment behind my feelings towards it. But I ran into PG last night, and it was great to see her, but it was uncomfortable because you and I discovered before Cambodia started airing that PG had listened to The Evolution of Strategy, Chapter 15. And as she announced that she was about to do it, I was like, no, don't. We have to fix this. It's kind of like when Kenny from Gabon listened to that.
Yeah, that's always a weird moment where a survivor is like, about to listen to Evolution of Strategy chapter.
I believe there's a deleted Rocky tweet who's like, oh, about to listen to Fiji. It's like,
I think that was a...
I don't know.
I think that was a hoax.
Okay, that might be a hoax. A
hoax cha-cho.
But it's always a hoax cha-cho. Oh, God, we got the hashtag. Write it down. She listened to it. She knew we've been totally friendly on social media and stuff. So, you know, she knew who I was. She remembered me from preseason. And I was like, hi, PG, super awkward that, you know, all of these feelings that I have about you. But she was, you know, good natured about it. And I hung out with her sister for a bit.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So that happened. It ended okay, but it was just an uncomfortable moment.
All right. So
I still love you, PG. Very, very, very much. I also told her not to be like too creeped out because I'm a happily married man. And then I thought about it. I was like, that makes this so much creepier. My wife is fully aware of it, but I don't know if that makes this better.
Hello, Peachy.
Oh Oh my god. That's my personal anthem for the rest of my life.
Make it your ringtone.
Yeah, I really would like to do that.
Josh, before we jump into talking social media, real quick, they aired at the end of the episode. We didn't touch on it last night. The preview for season 32 of Survivor, Ko Rong.
That's right.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah, you're saying it right.
You excited? Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty 2.
Yeah, we're doing 3B2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a 2B2. Yeah, we're going back to the well on that. It sounds like it's going to be a very brutal season. That's what the emphasis of this preview was.
Really trying to hype up this is the most brutal season ever. What season has that honor right now?
Oh, man. I mean, if you want to talk about the time that dude fell in a fire, that was not great.
I mean, but you want to talk about just like in terms of conditions? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could talk about it for a while. You could talk about Philippines. You could talk about Samoa. You could also talk about You could talk about Guatemala. You could talk about that bloodbath.
Africa.
Yeah. But you could also talk about the season we just finished watching, which happened to take place in the same exact location that season 32 takes place in. Season 32 having filmed before season 31. There have been legends of Cambodia just being awfully treacherous. It was pretty pleasant when I was there. It was very hot, but I can see it. I can see it. I mean, this is going to be, this could be really, really gnarly. This could be a really gnarly season.
Yeah. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how Survivor handles the follow-up to the all-star season, the Survivor Hangover seasons. Again, more Hangovers.
I know.
Of Vanuatu after All-Stars, of Nicaragua after Heroes versus Villains. It has not been a great history, but I always like the idea of being in that Wentworth spot of the low expectations.
Right, right, right.
That's where you have the ability to really make the leap.
Yeah. I think even on, you know, and in retrospect, a lot of those seasons can be really, really fun. I think a lot of people love Vanuatu. Nicaragua has its supporters. We certainly had a good time with that season. So I think that if you come into the follow-up to what was a historic season of Survivor with an open heart and an open mind and an empty stomach, you might be pleased. So I'm ready to feast on 3B2. I think that this could be good.
All right. Let's talk about the Survivor social media for the last time in season 31. Hit it, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Survivor tweets. They're better than making Survivor historietz. Tweets.
Yes.
Historietz? Is that like a new brand of Doritz?
Yes, that is. Mm. Thanks so much to Ryan Elder. All season long, kept those jingles coming. You could follow Ryan Elder on Twitter. He's at Ryan Elder Music. I have so much Survivor social media to
Rob
to
is like
about.
Holding like a leather bound book in his hand right
yeah.
now.
So
there's a lot happened.
Look, I get a lot of help behind the scenes with the podcast. So thanks to Mark Solera, Mike Shaheen, and Alex Kidwell has sent me a lot of stuff as well for this segment. So let me just try to give you some of the highlights. But basically, every Survivor worth their salt was tweeting during the show last night. Okay, let's go through it. Jeremy Collins has the thank you for voting me back in, for cheering for me, for believing for me, and supporting me. Hashtag, we did it.
We did it. We did it together.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't do it for me. I did it for we.
Yeah, so we're part of this we?
We did it.
Which we?
Squad goals.
Which we?
For Jeremy Collins. Yeah, which we?
Yeah. There's a lot of, he could be subtweeting there. There's a lot of different ways you could take that.
Spencer. Got put in the dressing room with Steven. He tweeted the picture of a picture with Steven, Survivor dressing rooms. This won't be awkward.
Yeah, this should go well. That was really good.
Yeah. Abby Maria tweeted, channeling my inner Donald Trump for Shireen. She is sitting right behind me.
Yeah. There's a picture that goes with that. And it's I've seen this. And it's Abby's hair is just like up in Trump style.
Yeah.
As they're doing hair and makeup. She looked good.
I love the idea of Abby Trump.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of writes itself.
Is Shireen kind of like the Jeb in this scenario? Where,
no.
Like if Shireen says anything about Abby Maria, Abby Maria is like, you see, you have low energy. This is just like what your pollsters told you to say about me.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump does have the whole if you F with me, you're dead strategy.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
That changes my whole outlook on Trump, the Abby Maria of of a politics.
Well, look, if as Iowa is looming and we're in the off season, you've got a great podcast on your hands, Rob, depending on how deep down that rabbit hole you want to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Stephen Fishback, he tweeted, "I'm proud to say that in the 7 years since my first finale, I have learned to drink in moderation and go to sleep at a reasonable hour." Yeah. True or false?
Yeah. Well, not last night. Definitely not last night. But
I think that was the Tuesday night
tweet.
I think that was the early victory lap.
It was the Tuesday night tweet because I didn't see him out and I had texted him. I was like, "Where were you? I wanted to hang out with you. Were you doing something cool that I didn't know about?" And he's like, "No, I was asleep."
Yeah.
So he slept. He slept in.
Okay. Wednesday night though?
Oh, he was out. I spilled a drink on him. I felt bad about it.
You spilled a drink on Steven?
Yeah. It was an accident.
Whoa.
I'm going to leave that with a question mark.
Steven tweeted, "ABW, always be weeping."
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's how he rolls. That's his new strategy.
He had a good line after Tasha called Kimmy a rat. He said, "What's up with all these contestants from Australia who are actually rats?"
Yeah. That's good.
Cass, she tweeted to Kelly Wentworth, "How about all those Brains Tribe puzzle masters?"
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shade.
Also, Cass had an interesting tweet today. She said, "Never put a lawyer on the jury. # Queen of Ponderosa. # Operation Goose Egg."
Wow. So is she taking credit for the 10-0-0?
Yes.
Wow. Well, I mean, she'd been saying that in her exits.
Vintage Cass trolling?
I mean, it's classic Cass. This is a Cass. This is very Cass. This is the epitome of a woman who is named Chaos Cass.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, I think that probably I would give that as much credence to the 10-0 vote as the Jeremy is having a baby to the 10-0 vote.
Right. I mean, look, do I believe that Cass worked her butt off in Ponderosa to get the vote to go the way she wanted to go? I could totally buy that. And you even see in the Ponderosa video, there's a huge explosive argument between her and Savage over their differing opinions on Tasha. Mm-hmm. So did that stuff exist? I gotta believe it did.
But who is
the reason that it's a 10-0-0? No way.
Who is the person that was voting for Tasha over Jeremy?
Right.
That Cass or Spencer over Jeremy? That Cass changed their mind.
Yeah, beats me. Beats
I don't know. All right, then let's see. Shireen, she posted a picture of herself and Jeff Varner. Jeff Varner was spelled Jeff Verner, and Shireen was spelled, I believe, with an L at the end of her last name.
O-school. O-school, new school.
O-school. Yeah. Hashtag CBS interns.
Yeah. And I believe that Marty Piombo might be working for them with the Jeff Verner.
Jeff Verner?
Yeah.
Are you sure it wasn't Brian Gumbel in the mix?
Oh, man. I wish that Brian Gumbel was in the mix. He may have had a hand in it.
Max Dawson tweeted, "We're going to need an entire volume of the Evolution Strategy dedicated to just that tribal council."
Oh, my God. Well, what could we charge for it? Because maybe it's not a bad idea.
The bonus feature.
Yeah, I need money.
Okay. Shane Powers was live tweeting the finale. He said, "Shot I won't gamble on doing puzzles against at Spencer BGM."
Wow.
He also said, $1 million will be spent by 2022. You being a creep is forever. # Survivor Finale Clown Posse.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Now, is that a Joe shot?
You're moldy.
Yeah, moldy Clown Posse.
I think that he was impressed with Keith wanting to bow out for Kimmy, and then somebody not doing it was being a creep forever. I don't know who was the creep
Who's the creep?
I don't know. Wow. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, now I'm just wondering if Clown Posse was the name of the pregame alliance he had with Varner and Wigglesworth and Terry. And now I'm really bummed that it didn't happen.
Yeah. Eliza live tweeted the finale. She was really worked up on a lot of different things. She tweeted at one point, "What a disappointment. What the F? Those final tribal questions were lame."
Well, she takes this jury thing very seriously.
Yeah.
As she should. She is truly the queen of Ponderosa.
Now, when Keith Nail said he didn't want to play the fake idol because it would be a cheesy way to go out, Eliza took a little exception to people playing a fake idol at Tribal Council.
I'm surprised.
She said, screw you, Keith. It's not a cheesy way to go out. You just play it, even if you know it's fake.
Listen, I don't think that, you know, FUAS really took off at one point this season. I don't think that FU Keith Nail is going to take off. I think that that's the wrong target. Get off that target.
Yeah.
The people love Keith Nail.
Don't stick to that plan.
No, no, no. No good.
And don't fake stick to that
don't
plan.
Don't fake stick to that plan. Don't effing stick to that plan.
Yeah. Okay, I got some Randy tweets, Josh, and since you do the better Randy of the two of us, can you give us the highlighted
sure.
Randy tweets?
Yeah, I got it. I would love a couple of challenges like the one in Samoa season 19 when there was no host.
Yeah, so Randy liked it when they did a bocce ball with no Jeff.
I'll buy you a bocce ball.
Randy is really anti-Jeff in a lot of his tweets.
Why does at Miss Foxy Tasha think all players from Survivor Australia, at Jeff Varner and at Kimmy Burke, at Kimmy Kappenberg, are small rodents?
Yeah, he's on the Steven kick, too.
Let's see. What's another good one? These are all great. Not since at Johnny Fairplay's grandma have I heard so much family bullshit.
Wow, Randy was not a fan of the Jeremy speech. Yeah.
When they cut to Savage in the jury, why does it always look like he just took a bite out of an onion? Hashtag Beanie Boy. I'll buy you a beanie.
So I asked Stephanie Savage about the beanie. I said, is Savage wearing the beanie tonight?
Yeah.
And she had said, like it's just a hat. Why does everyone make a big deal about that? But I think
it's just a hat.
Yeah.
It's the hat of the year.
It's not just a hat,
it's
Stephanie.
The hat.
Yeah. She didn't know why people were making a big deal out of it, but I think that she was sort of like, I don't know if maybe he wanted to wear it, but I think she was sort of shooting down. Uh-huh. She seemed like anti beanie as a thing, and probably maybe a little anti beanie.
I don't think you want to be anti beanie. You're going to live a happier life if you're pro beanie.
Boy, you know who was back in full force last night?
Who's that?
Penner.
Penner, he's back.
Yes. Yes. So Penner, he's been making a movie all fall, but he was live tweeting the finale, and he was really just tweeting up a storm. He had he started every single tweet with hashtag. He puts the hashtag at the start.
Okay.
Like, he does it. He does the opposite.
That's his tell. Yeah. That's his mark.
So, Survivor finale, day 35, all those stairs look homicidal.
That's good.
He says, if I was Jeremy, I'd tell Jeff where to stuff those final steps. Shut up.
Wow.
He said, Abby, looking pissed. Not enough booze yet.
Looking pissed.
This is a really good one. He says, Savage's hat makes him look like one of the Joker's henchmen when he fought Adam West.
Wow. Adam West reference.
Yeah.
I didn't think we would get an Adam West reference going in here. Some Survivor Batman action.
So this was Penner during the final six tribal council. He says, who makes these rules? And Keith Sex? He's willing to give up 10K? Brilliant move. By the way, that tribal probably took hours.
Did you say Keith Sex?
I think that what Penner is trying to say is because Keith is a man and he's being chivalrous to Kimmy. Mm. He's willing to give up $10,000 in prize money. I think that's, I speak Penner.
Okay, wait, so I'm not reading it. It's Keith's sex,
yes,
as opposed to Keith sex.
Not like Keith's ex-wife.
Like not something, Keith, and not something that's being offered up. Like,
right. Replace
hey,
the
nail males, the top level nail males, we're offering Keith sex.
Yeah, replace sex with gender.
Right,
and
okay,
you'll
got it. That makes more sense.
Also, Penner said, B, what's with all the chairs? We had to find ass-shaped rocks.
Yeah, man, Survivor's so easy now.
He also says, I love Keith's Gabby Hayes imitation. That nice fake idol. They're handing out beads and threads on day one?
Yeah.
Who's Gabby Hayes?
I don't know. We look really dumb for not knowing that.
Also, Penner said, the sound of Jeff's voice would lure me into telling him to F off. And of course, lose as usual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he wouldn't be around for this one.
And then, Penner, he has so many good ones. He says, I think I'm so damn smart and witty, but I type like a moron chimp. Smart as a rock.
Wow.
So good stuff.
That makes me very excited for his movie.
Good stuff. Yeah, I hope it's just all with great Penner tweets.
I mean, that really actually did just legitimately make me very excited for his movie.
Sophie tweeted, so Spencer can't win a puzzle he hasn't memorized?
Oh, that's a good shot.
Too soon, Sophie.
That's a good shot,
too
though.
Soon.
That's good. I like it.
Too soon. Bryce Isaiah tweeted, OMG, this is a Bush and Gore vote. That was during the final six. The Supreme Court did not have to get involved with that.
Wow. Bryce Isaiah getting so political.
Yeah. Jenna Lewis, Kimmy Kappenberg was no fan of hers.
No.
She tweeted, Entenmann's is in the wrong business. Should be making home security. Ever try getting into one of those freaking donut boxes?
What does this have to do with anything?
I don't know. It's like that Jenna Lewis is like a hot take. Entenmann's boxes, hard to open.
Gotta say, started this season very high on a third time's the charm for Jenna Lewis. And after that, I don't know about that. If that's what we're getting, we're just getting cookie tweets.
Jenna Lewis can't open the Entenmann's box.
Yeah, and listen, the cookie game is on lock for Survivor. You can't co-opt that. Angie's got that. She has to have something.
Tony tweeted, wow, I'm speechless. Did not expect that. Congrats, Jeremy to Collins. Thought it was going to be a much closer race. Wow.
He spelled Jeremiah wrong. Spelled Jeremiah wrong.
Yeah. Who's Jeremiah?
Yeah.
Kim Spradlin. She tweeted, I heart Survivor Keith. So she is a nail female.
Nail female. Oh, this was a great moment. Malcolm's interview with Keith Nail, he dropped the nail mail at the end of it, but he did so in a very uncomfortable way. He said that his mom is Keith's biggest fan. She loves Keith. And she said, and my mom is a nail mail.
Oh, no.
I think you got it wrong. Just a guess.
Wow. Wow. So really, I mean, we could just go all night, but we got to start to wrap this things up. So many survivors were tweeting.
Full force.
Everybody. Rupert. No Rupert.
He didn't schedule those. He didn't get that.
Yeah. People really liked this last week when we did the T-Bird tweets. I'm not going to do the game just because, you know, we're running on fumes here
tonight. But at least bring her into the Cambodia finale if you can.
Okay. All right. Here's T-Bird tweets. Of course, the capitalization will be when I speak louder. Okay. Right. Here's some T-Bird tweets from last night. It's a wonderful life at Jeff Probst. Every time a fire is put out, an angel loses his wings.
Oh my God. Who is that about?
This is every time Jeff Probst puts out a torch, an angel gets its wings.
Wow.
That's the a wonderful life of Survivor.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
She's too good for this game.
Yeah. That's right. Those she said, cheesy idol, you done good at Survivor, Keith, and we love you more than you ever. You did play with integrity. Much respect.
Oh, man.
Let's see. She also said, winner of Survivor is a win. Is a win. Is a win.
What?
And Jeremy, you won. A clean sweep. Amazing. Oh. Well played. Well deserved.
It was me.
So really, wow.
Oh, T-Bird.
Yeah.
So sad that T-Bird didn't get that shot.
Yeah. Every T-Bird tweet is just like peaks and valleys of lowercase, all caps, lowercase, all caps.
You know what? At least we got her on social media. At least we got her actively involved in watching and talking about Survivor, because this is gold.
Season was a win.
Golden stuff.
It was a win. All right, Josh.
It's a good win?
Yeah, good win.
Yeah.
Okay. Any final thoughts on everything that we've learned here over these last 7 months?
No, man.
Oh, it's done. Hello.
Oh, man. I learned that I have a new favorite song of all time. I've learned to be careful about, you know, admitting to my crushes on Survivors on podcasts and then meeting them and feeling really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm fried. It's been a long couple of days. It's been a long stretch of talking about this season. We've been talking about Cambodia since, you know, the beginning of May. It's been a while. And so this is, you know, again, I said this earlier and I don't think I'm breaking any ground. It's one of the most heavily invested seasons. These are all people we really wanted to see play again. They played hard. It was, you know, you were rooting for your favorites all along the way in a way that you don't always do with a given season of Survivor. So it was an exhausting season on just about every level. And I think you saw it even with the players. Like, they were all just like emotionally exhausted by the end of this thing and physically exhausted. So I reflect that. I feel that way.
Yeah, yeah. I know. So we're all going to take a little bit of a break from the Survivor stuff for a bit. You know, I'm still going to get together with David Bloomberg. We'll talk about why Jeremy won and why everybody else lost. Should be a fun podcast that's going to be coming out next week. Going to work on the Happy Holidays special. And that's usually when I start cramming the next couple of days on that, starting to try to record that. Hopefully I'll have that for you guys come like Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. A lot of legwork still to do on that one.
Yeah, sort
of,
I can imagine.
Put that on the back burner a little bit, Josh. So now you
got to go sprint. You got to do a Papa Bear full sprint.
Yeah,
towards that.
Yeah, this is a little bit like finals week, and now I got to start cramming for that. So, but hopefully I will have a show for you guys for that one. Plus, I'm also trying to work on a best of 2015 end of year special. And what I would like people to do is I'm going to set up a post. Go to robiswebsite.com/best of 2015. Best of 2015, the numbers. And there, I just want, I'll just set up a post. And in the comments of that page, I just like people to submit what they thought was the best moments from this year. And I'd like to, during the week between Christmas and New Year's, do a podcast and post my top 10 best of 2015 moments.
Cool. I can't wait to listen.
Should be a lot of fun. And then I really want to do some deep dive interviews with the people from this cast.
Yeah, you know? Line that up. We need to hear it because this is such a complicated season. It was really hard to break it down on the fly. I have so much respect for what you and Fishback have done for all of these seasons because it's tough. It's really hard. And this season especially just was a lot going on. So to get all of those takes on stuff we didn't see or explanations for moves that just did not seem to make sense to us, or even just, you know, breaking down some of the all-star, rock-star moves, I can't wait to listen to all that stuff.
All right. So, of course, everything that Josh is doing, you could follow him on Twitter. He's at RoundHoward. You've got some stuff coming up for Parade?
Yeah, I'm still working on my write-up from the finale. These things are endeavors. You know, it takes a long time to write the way that I do. So that is still in the works, but yeah. Keep an eye out for all that stuff. But other than that, I'm dropping the mic on Survivor for a while. For like the first time since June 2014, I'm taking a minute away from the show. And, you know, I don't know what to do with myself.
Are you going to be doing coverage for season 32?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely do coverage for season 32. But this coming
off season.
But for the off season is like my first pure off season since, you know, since June 2014 when we started recording Evolution. So I'm in my way, I am really looking forward to that. Looking forward to taking a little bit of a snooze.
All right. But we are going to have plenty more Survivor coverage in the offseason as we start the march to Survivor 32. What could go wrong?
Oh, man. We're going to be saying that.
Is that too hacky to still make that joke?
You know, I think that people have been...
Can I have a day before we say that we're retiring that joke?
I think a lot of people have been saying that. So I think that you can expect to hear that a lot as this season is going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very excited about all that. What do you like? You like the hashtag hoax chacho?
That was really funny. That made me laugh a lot.
Yes. It's a really good.
Yo, bro chacho.
Hello, PG is also not bad.
Yeah.
What's up, bro chacho?
Yeah. I was talking to Shireen last night. She told me that she heard Terry Dietz. He's got a new one.
I heard this too. Yeah. I'll give you the honors.
She said that backstage in the green room, she heard that Terry referred to somebody else as Brosidon.
Brosidon, yeah. I believe it was he'd referred to Savage as that.
Brosidon.
Yeah. So it's like the king of the brochachos.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brosidon.
He lives beneath the water.
Yeah.
So Brosidon.
I love that.
Okay. So, Josh, I could do easily 13 more hours here tonight until I just fall down like Joe in the challenge. Yeah. And just the microphone would just keep going and recording.
But does that mean I win immunity?
Mercilessly, we have to end this. But if you want to check out the Evolution Strategy, 300 more hours of this nonsense for the uninitiated, go to evolutionstrategy.com, check out the first chapter for free and see if you want to continue on that crazy journey with us. And of course, use the code Coven or Coven.
However,
I've heard it both ways.
I've heard it that way too.
I've heard it both ways. Yeah. That's for $5 off volume one of the Evolution of Strategy. And anything else?
No. Rob, thank you for enduring me for the past few months and everybody else. Thank you guys. You've all been awesome and I've had such a good time.
And again, thanks everybody who's been using our link for Amazon.com this holiday season. Greatly appreciate that. And so with that, we're going to bid adieu to season 31. Of Survivor Second Chance. Much more to come here on Rob as a Podcast.
This time, we're doing something different.
It's what we've always done. Hello, Peachy. I was wondering if you knew where Abby's bracelet could be. The Brazilian firecracker. If you F with her, you're dead. Just ask Shireen Savage and Jeff Farner. Hello, Bro Chachos. They're in Cambodia playing after getting all our votes a second chance to prove that they could choose the right voting block and when to make big moves. Sierra told us.